Good day, aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. Let's see what we have on the docket today. First, new information in the homicide investigation regarding Maggie and Paul Murdoch. I wonder who it could involve. Second, arrest of a juvenile in the death of a 10-year-old by the name of Lily Peters. Derek Chauvin's attorneys file an appeal in his case. A prostitute's going to prison for killing her Johns. And then finally, our dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it. All right, aficionados, this is Crime Talk. My name is Scott. Let's get to it. You know the drill. If you haven't done so, hit that subscribe button, leave me a comment, hit that bell so you get notifications. Remember, if you can't watch us, you can listen to us anytime by downloading us on your favorite podcasting app. And please support the people that support our channel. Let's take a quick break. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever, but if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship, you're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. All right, before we get to the docket, remember, we're going to be on the road tomorrow heading to Las Vegas, the entire crew, setting up for CrimeCon. So if you're going out there, please come by and say hi. We would love to talk to you. All right, let's open the docket for Wednesday, April 27th, 2022. First, the Alec Murdoch case. And I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, this is taking some time, but it's going to get good, okay? Now, there have been reports that there's been somewhat of a break in the Murdoch investigations as it relates to the death of Paul and Maggie Murdoch. Okay. Well, it turns out apparently a shirt worn by Alex Murdoch, Maggie's husband, apparently has what they are saying is some blood that the police have said that there's a significant amount of high velocity impact spatter on this shirt from at least one of the bodies. Now, according to Fitz News, they're the ones that came up with this story, that the spatter indicates that Murdoch was physically close to one or more of the family members when they were shot. Now, Murdoch told the investigators on the night of June 7th of 2021, when his family was murdered, he was with his ailing father all night and arrived home to find Maggie and Paul shot dead. Now, the shirt has apparently been independently analyzed, and there's a confirmation by multiple forensic experts, including at least one by the state lab. Now, Mr. Murdoch remains the only person of interest in the double homicide, which, not surprising, and the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division appears to be closer to filing charges when it comes to homicide. And the Fitz News organizations also claims a source has told them that a high-velocity impact spatter is not the only evidence placing Murdoch at the scene. I would hope so. They're going to need something more than a little bit of blood, which any defense attorney would go all over the expert with, that it could have been some sort of incidental contact when he was there consoling his family and realizing that they are in fact deceased. Apparently, other evidence that they're aware of could include that at least one of the weapons used in the double homicide belonged to the Murdoch family, and sources close to the investigation say that Maggie Murdoch was shot multiple times with a high-powered rifle. One of the bullets reportedly threw her back, and the other allegedly went through the back of her head as she was lying on the ground face down. Now, according to the death certificates, Paul Murdoch was killed by two shotgun wounds, one to the chest and one to the head. High-velocity impact spatter is usually associated with gunshots, which can result in a spray of tiny mist-like droplets it can be difficult for blood stain analysis to determine whether the droplets of fluid were from the shooting itself or were expirated by the victim, because both can have a mist-like appearance. Now, Murdoch's clothes that night were stained with blood, which is consistent with his account of touching the bodies. But it is the high-velocity impact spatter on his shirt that places him at the scene and in proximity to one or both of the victims at the time of their shooting deaths. Now, ultimately, the investigation will remain open until charges are filed against the person or persons responsible for the killing of Maggie and Paul Murdoch. And let's just say we're giving everyone the presumption of innocence, just like Mr. Murdoch. Now, I said last night when we were live, the high-velocity blood spatter, I was not familiar with that term. And so I actually had to break out the handy-dandy Practical Crime Scene Analysis and Reconstruction book. And it goes in and explains the various patterns relating to blood spatter. It's a very interesting chapter. There's a classification of blood stain pattern that goes into low, medium, and high velocity. Then they have passive and dynamic, spatter and non-spatter, and taxonomic. And I'd never seen the high velocity blood spatter in a case of mine. So I looked that up. And so it just shows, when you think you've maybe seen it all, just you have to remember, you don't know everything and you got to go check it out. We like this. If you ever buy this book, it's a great book. And I also recommend the handbook on the Handbook of Forensic Pathology if you ever really want to get into stuff. It's a good starting point, but remember, you got to trust the experts. We'll see that Murdoch case. It's going to get good. I know the financial stuff, kind of boring, but man, there's so many twists that this could take. It could be the biggest trial that's taken place in South Carolina if it goes, and it's going to be huge. And it's going to take down so many people in South Carolina. And not that I want that on anybody, but it just shows the higher echelon, they can be just as dirty as the low-level criminals at the bottom. Just saying. All right, next on the docket, let's talk about Lily Peters. There's been an arrest in regards to the death of the 10-year-old. Now, Lily Peters, 10, visited her aunt's home in Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin on Sunday night. Her house is only a few blocks away from her home. At 9 p.m., her father, Alexander, reported her missing. Police then found her bicycle in a hiking trail behind her aunt's house. Her body was found nearby the next day. It remains unclear how she died. Police have arrested a juvenile male in connection with the death of Lily Peters. Now, the juvenile has not been named for obvious reasons, but it has been reported that he is known to the Peters family. The Chippewa Falls Police Department has received more than 200 tips about the case, which police said provided critical to their investigation. And on Monday, police confirmed that the little girl's disappearance was being investigated as a homicide. Her bike was found close to the Leinenkugel Brewery as the police followed up on a number of leads, with about 20 agencies assisting in the investigation. An autopsy has been completed, but no results have been made to the public yet. And next, we were going to talk about Johnny Depp, but I decided, no, not going to do it. All right, next, Derek Chauvin. Remember him, the former Minneapolis police officer? He, through his attorneys, have filed with the Court of Appeals a brief to overturn his conviction for the 2020 murder of George Floyd. And that brief that they filed was 82 pages long, and it lists more than a dozen reasons why the case should be reversed. One of the points that the attorneys were arguing were that the venue should have been changed as it tainted the proceedings and rendered them structurally defective, including extensive pretrial publicity and the protests outside the courthouse, as well as the city's announcement during jury selection that it would pay $27 million for a settlement to the Floyd's family. Among the issues Chauvin and his attorneys are asking the court to review include whether the venue should have been changed, the jury fully sequestered, or the trial delay due to pretrial protests and media coverage. Their appeal also includes accusations of misconduct from the prosecution, including the state's attorney failing to properly disclose discovery information. Gee, I only thought that happened in Colorado. Nope, it happens everywhere. Well, the appeal argues Chauvin's conviction should be overturned and the court should order a new trial in a new venue. If the conviction is upheld, the appellate filings say the court should reduce Chauvin's sentencing to be within the state's sentencing guidelines. As you recall, Chauvin was sentenced to 22 and a half years in prison, which exceeded the sentencing guideline range of between 8 and 15 years. The brief also argues that if the court affirms the conviction on appeal, that the court should reduce Chauvin's sentence to be within the state's sentencing guidelines. As you may recall, Chauvin was sentenced to 22 and a half years in prison, which exceeds Minnesota's sentencing guideline range of 10 years and 8 months to 15 years. It certainly doesn't help that Derek Chauvin pled guilty in federal court to violating Mr. Floyd's rights, because the appellate courts will know that and they'll say, well, gee, what does it really matter? He pled guilty. But we'll see what they do. If anything, Derek Chauvin probably has been told by his attorneys, don't expect much relief. As a general rule, maybe 2% of all appeals that go up result in a new trial coming back and having to be retried. So, not great odds for him. Next on the docket, a prostitute. Yep, going to prison for killing her Johns. Now, this prostitute was from Queens, New York, and she was sentenced to 30 years for fatally drugging 4 men with fentanyl back in 2019 so that she could rob them. Angelina Barini cried in court on Tuesday as she admitted distributing fentanyl and a date rape drug called GBL to 3 unnamed men, as well as the restaurant Ciparini chef Andrea Zamperoni. His body was found inside a garbage bin at an Elmhurst hotel in August of 2019. Now, prosecutors praised the 30-year sentence and hoped that it would serve as a warning to anyone trying to use drugs to commit their horrific crimes. Prosecutor said that Barini, while operating as a sex worker, had a habit of providing drugs to her clients in order to incapacitate and rob them, according to the court records. And the records show that on July 4th of 2019, Barini met with one of the victims at a motel in Astoria and gave him fentanyl-laced drugs. He was found dead later that same day. Investigators said similar events happened on July 11th in Woodside and to a 60-year-old victim on August 5th in College Point, with both men dying of an overdose from fentanyl-laced drugs. Then, on August 18, 2019, prosecutors say that Barini met Zamperoni at the Kemway Lodge Motel in Elmhurst, where she drugged him with GBL, killing him almost immediately. Barini had made repeated attempts to dispose of Zamperoni's body at the motel, which was found 3 days later at a garbage bin wrapped in bleach-stained sheets. Now, Barini allegedly orchestrated the crime with an ex-boyfriend, Leslie Lescano, who was also arrested and charged with conspiring to distribute a controlled substance. Sally, Barini's older sister, said that she thought the sentence was a bit harsh and she was planning on appealing the decision. I think what wasn't taken into account was that, of course, what happened was wrong, but that the victims themselves put themselves in that situation, Sally said. Oh, yeah, that's a really good argument to make at sentencing. Blame the victims. You betcha. She went on to say that they weren't saints. They went with her. They wanted a party, and they wanted to do drugs and have sex. It wasn't like she put a gun to somebody's head and forced them to go with her. Wow. Not a whole lot of acceptance responsibility there by the sister, is there? Oh, that's not a good argument. Seriously, it's sentencing. They've been found guilty. You have to say nice words about everybody. And let me tell you, had that case gone to a federal court, if you distribute drugs and somebody dies, there's a mandatory minimum sentence of 20 years to life. So I would think she got off quite easy. Her sister may want to say thank you and move on. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal of the day. An Idaho man by the name of William Peter Kozaya was pulled over by an officer on the Pocatello Police Department after running the license plates on his motorcycle. Now, according to the arrest affidavit, the license plates were registered to a trailer. When the officer asked the driver of the motorcycle about the license plate, he said he had purchased the bike 1 year ago and the plates came with it. The driver did not provide the officer with any documents telling him the officer that his name was in fact Dewey Kozaya. The officer checked the VIN number on the bike, which confirmed that the bike was stolen. Police asked for his driver's license and asked Kozaya why his name didn't match up with the name on his license. Kozaya said that the driver's license belonged to his brother, who happened to have the exact same tattoos as him. Now, Kozaya had a warrant from a 2016 felony charge for possession of a controlled substance and was arrested. He's being held in the Bangkok County Jail on $20,000 bond. He's lucky he's not also charged with some sort of attempting to influence a public official. Do not try to pass yourself off as your brother with identical tattoos and a different name just to try and get out of trouble. They're gonna figure it out. So for that, Mr. William Peter Kozaya, you are a dumb criminal of the day. All right, thanks for watching. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.